Welcome to the Cool Kids Table.
Oh, God, we are so cool.
Two. We're so excited to team up with Radio Free Brooklyn. I'm one of your co-hosts, Maggie Stiggers.
Hey.
I changed my name. I got married.
Yes,
get used
Maggie.
To it. I am the co-executive producer, co-founder of Nico Frank Productions, a nonprofit organization specializing in comedic shorts. We have a brand new show on Amazon Prime, Theater School Dropouts. We're going into season two of that as well. I'm here with my co-host and co-executive producer and co-founder, Spiro Marcos.
Hi, ladies and gentlemen. I am Spiro Marcos. I'm also the best friend of Maggie Stiggers. So happy to say Maggie Stiggers. I'm so happy to be here. So excited about season two. So excited about Radio Free Brooklyn. So excited about Theater School Dropouts. So one thing we always like to do is this podcast is all about celebrating kindness in the industry. So one little segment we like to always start off with is Random Facts of Kindness.
Random Facts of Kindness.
So we like to talk about a kind gesture or something that has happened in the world there. And I think, Maggie, you said you had a random fact today.
Well, so this is sort of one. It kind of goes with it. But I've watched El Camino.
I'm watching it. I'm in the process.
Breaking Bad movie, spinoff starring Aaron Paul. It was really good. It was really, really good. Anyway, then I went into this like stalker moment on Instagram where I was like, I want to look at his Instagram. Yeah. Then from there, I went to his wife's page, come to find out she runs a campaign called Kind Campaign.
Ugh.
And they go around to schools all over the United States and they talk to girls, young girls. It's a whole assembly. It's free also. So if your child is having any issues with bullying in school, you can contact the Kind Campaign and they'll go into your school for free, do an assembly, talk about communication. They teach girls how to compliment one another instead of bring each other down. Their Instagram is like filled with girls hugging each other. And it was really, really beautiful.
How can people find out about this?
They have an Instagram Kind campaign, and I think they have a website. But to circle back around, so I went and I looked at something that she posted about Aaron Paul, her husband, and I thought it was really beautiful. It was his birthday, and a really long post, so I'm gonna shorten it.
Cliff notes.
Just the cliff notes. But she basically talks about what he means to their family as a father and as a husband, and he just turned 40. And she basically had all their family members write letters about him and what he means to them. And there was this resounding theme of the way that he treats people in his life. And in mid-post, it goes, that you've remained true to yourself and have never changed who you are, from looking for quarters in your couch to finally being able to afford dinner to never giving up on your dream to eventually finding huge success. You've held on to your heart and your integrity, that you treat everyone in a room with the same amount of respect and love, no matter who they are, friend or stranger, that you bring huge joy and fun to every situation, that you dream and love so big it's contagious, that every person's most special memories and adventures have been facilitated by and shared with you, that you're committed to family, that everyone who works with you, from cast to crew, consistently says that you're their favorite person that they've ever worked with, not only because of how lucky they feel to witness your talent, but because of how you treat every person and the positivity you bring onto set, that you've changed the lives of your friends and have made them better humans.
Wow.
That you have inspired every man in your life to love out loud and to not be scared to honor and embrace their sensitivity, that you are pure magic.
So it humanizes him. Like, we only see him on TV. We only see him on the screen. But, like, here's his family celebrating him.
Yeah, and you like to believe that these stars are really nice.
Yeah,
I know. You know, and I thought it was a really a very cool kids table post and moment. And I wanted to share
that.
But this is a particularly inspirational episode for actors out there that are hustling and still going after their dreams. So sit back, relax, and here it is coming up next on the Cool Kids Table, where it's cool to be kind.
You're
listening
to
the
Cool
Kids
Table
on
Radio
Free
Brooklyn.
Hey, did you know that Radio Free Brooklyn's mission is to provide a free and open platform to our community and promote media literacy, education, and free expression? We rely primarily on donations from listeners like you. Every dollar helps us stay on the air. Support independent community media by pledging whatever you can. All contributions are tax deductible to the fullest extent of the law. Please support with a monthly pledge or one-time donation at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate.
It's the Cool Kids Table. They were never the cool kids, so they just bought a table. Now it's the Cool Kids Table, yeah.
Nice legs.
So cool.
Is that real mahogany?
That's nice.
Love that table.
Tight.
They're so cool.
Looks
like a coaster's only table to me.
I've really never been more excited to say an intro because I have one of my besties here.
tell us, Maggie. Tell us all about it.
Sarah Beth Pfeiffer recently made her Broadway debut in Percy Jackson's The Lightning Thief. Woo, woo. Yeah. Just saying that sentence makes me happy. Aww. The show officially opens October 16th. Sarah Beth has one of the most fascinating stories detailing her journey in this show. What started off as an Actors Access submission led to the New York workshop, the national tour. She directed a second tour of the production, a sold-out run at the Beacon Theater, and then to Broadway, making it the original Broadway cast. It's the first theater work show in history to have a Broadway debut.
That's huge, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen. That's a big deal.
It gives Just me the saying. Shivers. It gives me the shivers. So welcome to the show, Sarah Beth.
Welcome.
Hi, friend.
Thank you so much for being here.
I'm so happy to be here.
We're pumped to have you. So we're gonna jump right in. Sarah Beth, your journey starts in a small little town of Ellicott, Maryland. So that's outside of Baltimore, correct?
Yes, Ellicott Great. City, Maryland.
Great. And I heard that it houses the oldest train station in the country. Did you even know this?
I don't think I did know that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, now you know. It's the oldest train station in the world. It was one of the first railway stops, which is pretty amazing. So what was it like growing up in Ellicott, Maryland that I've never heard of?
I mean, the way I like to put it is just picture a generic suburb that could probably be anywhere. Add the fact that, you know, steamed crabs are my favorite food.
Yeah.
As pretty much my only piece of regional identity. And yeah, I mean, I went to amazing schools. Like I grew up around amazing people. But yeah, like in terms of like culture and sort of like interesting regional identity, I would not say Ellicott City is leading the charge there.
Okay, fair enough. But I mean, you liked growing up there. You had a good childhood. You had friends and all that.
I mean, totally. I mean, most importantly, I got amazing arts education opportunities. Like the people that I still know from my hometown are all the people from the sort of like extracurricular theater things that I did who are all here and so many of them crushing the game.
I love it.
Yeah.
Can you? Sorry, Maggie, go.
Oh, I was just going to say, were you like a storyteller back then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, I would say my first love was just being a drama queen. I was just one of those little kids that Ditto. Really needed the spotlight, honey.
Yes.
yes. Okay.
I mean, I always loved to sing. I always could sing. And so, you know, like my parents started me in theater camp and like fourth grade. Actually, this is a pretty hilarious anecdote. I am proudly queer and, you know, like
we love that.
I'm owning that more and more with each passing day. I have a beautiful fiance named Lily. Yes. So just, you know, early signs. My first show ever was in fifth grade. It was entitled Tall Tales and Heroes. And I couldn't have been more excited to go up to the teacher and volunteer to play Paul Bunyan.
Oh, thank the heavens for Paul Bunyan.
So we had the flannel. I'm just one of the kids that got bitten by the bug and never let go.
I like just out of curiosity, because I know you're a celebrity now in Lake Placid, because Sarah Beth came home with me to Lake Placid a few weeks ago. And now my family has been telling everyone around town that my friend is making their Broadway debut, as they do. Are you a bit of a celebrity back home now when you go home? Are your parents just like telling everyone, you know?
Yes, yes. And it's amazing. One of the amazing things about making your Broadway debut is like with social media existing and, you know, you're still friends with the people on Facebook that maybe you haven't talked to in 10 years, whatever. Like it. You are bringing your community, your entire community with you on this journey.
Amen.
You know, like the people reaching out that I haven't thought about or talked to in so many years that like this means something to them that Aww. Like because, you know, because it's been my dream for so long. And I think it's just like inspiring to see someone that even if you haven't talked to them in 10 years, like you knew they had this dream and it's finally coming to fruition. Like, it's really cool. My best friend from high school, shout out to Kristen Swobot.
Yeah, shout outs.
Came to see the show. I mean, she's the girl that like I would just skrelt, you know, to the Aida and the Rent soundtrack to like in her car. like came to see it, and it was this crazy full circle moment, you know, like it's really cool.
I one time got pulled over by a cop and like at 16 and like passed it, and he was like, I was literally following you for miles with my siren on, and I was like, oh, I was belting Wicked, I'm so sorry. I just wonder if he would come. He'll probably come to my Broadway debut. He'll be there.
Did he give you a ticket?
No.
Of course not. Only you would get out of a ticket after belting Wicked.
I never get tickets ever.
My question is, when you were young, was there someone that like really showed you kindness and kind of paved the way for you as far as your theater career? Or did you just kind of jump right in and your family was like, she's going to do theater? How did that come to be?
I mean, yeah, my parents were always super, super supportive. Like, I mean, it was the greatest relief of my life when my dad finally decided that I didn't have to do cross country my freshman year of high school because I got into the fall musical.
That's awesome.
that was a nice act of kindness that he did for
That's
me.
That's great. Love. Thank you,
Dad.
I was an
indoor child.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that.
Nope, not at all. But I mean, yeah, like one person that sticks out is this woman named Toby Ornstein. She famously has a dinner theater in Columbia, Maryland, which is right next door to Ellicott City, named Toby's Dinner Theater, has been there for decades and has, you know, in terms of just a small regional house that's just consistently employing like a community of actors in Columbia, Maryland, the suburb, and doing really amazing work, you know, for the community to come see, and then also for these artists to have like a place to work. That part's amazing, but also she just has a passion for educating as well. So she has this commercial business, and then also she has a whole wing of her business called the Columbia Center for Theatrical Arts.
Wow.
Where she's just been like on the ground in the trenches, you know, directing kids' shows and educating them. And she has this this troupe called the Young Columbians.
Oh.
Who, you know, we had red, white, and black outfits, like, you know, Velcro skirts. That
you all matched?
Like, oh, yeah. Well, there was like a scarf involved and like
yes!
a reversible skirt. And we had this show that was called The Young Columbian Salute to America.
Oh, gosh. Praise be.
Tracing America's history through its music, obviously. And this is that I kind of referenced this earlier. This is the group where so many of us are still here. Like, I don't know if you guys know Caroline Bowman. She was Elphaba on Broadway.
She was in No Birth at All.
She was in No Birth at All.
Yeah, she was a young Colombian. Who else? Well, he was before my time, but supposedly Edward Norton was a young Colombian.
Oh my goodness. And it's this, I just saw him this morning on Kelly and Ryan.
There
Six
you go.
Degrees of Edward Norton. He went to my acting school. Wow, yeah. This is
literally just that I watched him on TV.
Great, great. We're all connected.
Hey,
Edward, would you like to be on the show?
Yes.
Only if you're nice.
Thank you. Heather.
I hear he is.
Yeah.
So that getting, and you know, please, I did not fit in very well in middle school. I have a feeling many of us can share those. And so having this outlet that like wasn't within like my school structure, you know, where, I mean, no offense, guys, the cool kids table, it's a little triggering for me because
you were not a cool
kid. Was at the bottom rung table in middle
babe,
school. Yeah. Kids table is very far away.
Well, that's the thing about this. We were never the cool kids, but all we did was surround ourselves with cool people like you.
Yeah.
So now we're the cool kids table.
Well, no, that is the best part because like because the reason I didn't fit in was because I couldn't edit who I was.
Right.
Amen. And you shouldn't have to ever.
And those are the people that grow up and change the world.
And do theater.
And definitely are end up being creative.
Isn't it kind of crazy how long it takes into your adulthood to really grasp and be completely happy with who you are? Like, and you know, it's something we all struggle with still, you know, but it's really hard to be who you are authentically as an adult in this career, in any career. But as soon as you do, you start to realize that all the things that are supposed to happen in your life happen.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to my therapist.
Yeah. Right. Love her. Her him.
Carrie is
Carrie.
The best.
Love
yep.
Her.
She's amazing. She's definitely. Well, and to me, the crazy thing, too, is, though, I think it's a constant process. Right.
Mm, yeah.
Because like as you level up, like you're perception of yourself and your, you know, image of yourself has to level up, like, as your career and your life levels up too. And, you know, it's like, I think keeping the faith when stuff isn't going on for you, like, and believing in yourself is one thing. But then, like, once you, like, once an opportunity, like what I'm experiencing now comes along, like, you have to, like, evolve your image of yourself again to, amen, like, mm-hmm, believe that you're worthy of it.
Wow.
Too, you know?
Yeah. Wow. That's huge. Write that down, ladies and gentlemen. Write that down. Note and, that.
And so to bring it back, I mean, like, to be honest, though, thinking about who I was, you know, in middle school and, like, making friends with all these weird theater kids outside of school and, like, then going to lunch and, you know, just, like, sitting at the least cool table in the cafeteria, like, being true to yourself in that way, like, having your own back in that way and finding the communities where, like, you know, people just authentically love who you are.
We always say find your tribe. We mention it a lot in this show. Mm-hmm. It's you got to find your tribe, especially in a group of creatives. Like, thank God we've grown up. I'm thankful for that. But, you know, even back then, I found my tribe. And even though I was a bit of an outcast, like, that's kind of saved my life a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And shout out to all the young Colombians that are still out there doing it.
Amazing. So your next step, you were lucky enough to attend Catholic University with the one and only Maggie Politi. Can you tell us what it was like to go to school with such an inspirational female?
Stop it.
Talk a little bit about your college experience and what that program was like for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a good segue. I like to think of Catholic as sort of like, it was a little bit, I say this with all the fondness in my heart, like the Island of Misfit Toys.
Yeah, don't
of
worry.
A musical
We've
theater
talked
program.
About Catholic. Right?
Oh, yeah. In a good way. In a good way. We love Catholic.
Yeah. But see, but like, so it's, I mean, there's a plus and a minus to that, mm-hmm, right? Like, it's like, it was not a commercial musical theater program that's going to, like, pump out kids that are ready to be on Broadway the day they graduate. By no means.
No.
But at the same time, like, you get to kind of, like, form your own identity. And I mean, it's weird, this kind of circles back to the conversation we're just having, like, ultimately, okay, so yeah, it took me 10 years to get on Broadway because I was not given the, like, really practical tools
right,
to graduate exactly. and get there. But at the same time, now, I mean, it is so special, like, the way I'm making my debut, like, with roles that, you know, like, I created and are so weird, and everyone in this process is, like, such a quirky weirdo. Like, I feel like Catholic did kind of prepare me for that, you know,
to,
like, embrace my own quirky, weirdo self.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky. I got to perform a lot at school. I got to, like, play a lot of roles. I got to direct. I was in the a cappella group. I mean, I also like to say, though, that I was, like, the absolute quintessential in high school and college A-plus student.
You
in
were.
A way
oh, my
that
goodness.
Did not prepare me very well for the real world. Because, like, what I excelled at was, if you gave me a structure and, like, a reward system and authority figures to hand out, you know, gold stars and A-pluses, I was going to work as hard as I possibly could. I didn't know what free time was. And, like, I just did it. But I was doing it for the A-pluses and the gold stars,
right.
You know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, like, the people that get out into the world and are just, like, making their own shit and, like, you know, like, really creating their own stuff, like, with a point of view, aren't they, like, usually, like, the C students, you know, the kids that were smart enough to be like, yeah, I see what you want from me, so I'm going to give you the bare minimum, but, mm-hmm, like, I'm also going to be over here doing what I, like, actually am interested in.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's been a huge process for me, like, in terms of I mean, you know, forgive me, I was a bit of, like, one of the golden children of our our musical theater program. And sometimes I honestly don't see that as being, like, an advantage, you know?
Right. I mean, I was not one of the golden children of the musical theater program, but I was always proud that I every single summer did summer stock because I had like this fire in me to prove to the department that I was worthy of being cast on a professional level, you know? So if I don't know if I had been cast, if I had shown up and gotten all the leading roles, I'm not sure I would have learned, like, my version of hard work, you know? So everyone just has, you know, their own experience. And I think it's like you can still get all the leading roles in college and know how to work hard. You do.
Of course.
But it's just, you know, perspective and things.
Yeah. Well, and then when I did graduate and, you know, like, once I got to the phase of my 20s where, like, I very much just did not work and was waiting tables for 4 years straight, like, I didn't necessarily, my the main work I had to do was to figure out, like, okay, if I can't get a creative outlet out of this, like, one sort of, like, main, like, commercial musical theater way, then, like, how am I going to be creative?
Yeah, well, this kind of segues into the next thing that I wanted to talk about, which is I distinctly remember, like, 4 years ago, we were in Central Park. We were both dating different people back then. Or maybe a little bit longer than 4 years. Could have been 5 years.
Yeah.
And we're sitting in Central Park. It's a beautiful sunny day. And you were telling me that you were preparing to quit Jacob's Pickles, this restaurant that Sarah Beth had worked at for a while on the Upper West Side. Really good restaurant. But yeah, she was telling me that she was just going to, like, take the risk. She was going to quit and just see where it brought her. Because, like, and at that time I was working at a restaurant too. And nothing's worse sometimes when you're in a certain environment and you want to be doing something else. And no offense to the place that you're working, but it's just not where your heart is. And you become this, like, worst version of yourself, sort of, because you're there in day in and day out and you're just so frustrated and your creativity is stifled. And I remember you telling me you were going to do it. You quit. And then 3 weeks later, you booked Swiffer, the voice of Swiffer, the big campaign. And so I just wanted to segue a little bit into you talking about your voiceover career and all of the excitement in that.
Yes, totally. I mean, voiceover changed my life. Yeah, like I was saying, I mean, I graduated from college. Like, I worked in D.C. for a while and, you know, did some, like, fun theater. I did a national tour and then, like, the brakes just slammed on. Mm-hmm. And yes, there I was at Jacob's Pickles for 4 years straight. With no booking whatsoever.
Right, because she did Legally Blonde, right?
I did the national tour of Legally Blonde. Yeah. Many years ago, we won't say how many. and truly voiceover is what saved me from that spiral. Because it's true, like you were saying, like, even though I think I only had to work at Jacob's like three nights a week to, like, make as much, you know, the money I needed to live off of, which doesn't sound like that much. It sounds like you would have so much of your life to, like, just be living and all of that. But, like, when you're doing something, and again, like, Jacob's is an amazing restaurant, and the fact that I had it during those years to support me in that way, like, I have nothing but great things to say about, you know, Jacob and, like, all of the management staff there. They treated me really well. So that's saying, like, the best case scenario restaurant,
right,
it still was just soul sucking.
Right.
You know, because it's this huge energy suck. It's a very tiring, difficult job. Mad props to all the waiters out there in the world.
Absolutely.
It is so tiring. It is so, like, it's energetically draining because it's customer service. And literally you're being tipped at the end of, like, you know, every person gets to, like, give you their little, like, opinion, and you're like, livelihood depends on it. It was, yeah, it's soul sucking. And for a creative person, it just, like, it didn't leave any room in my life for, like, the goodness to come in, kind of, you know, like, and so it is amazing. I don't know. I don't get that woo woo about stuff necessarily, but it's uncanny how when I took that leap and quit and said, okay, I have this much money saved, and if I have to spend all of it just to, like, say that I gave, like, this life that I want a full-time shot for once, then, like, it will be worth it.
Yeah.
Even if I just blow through it, you know?
Right.
Because then at the end I can be in a better position to, like, either, you know, walk away or get another waiting tables job and decide that that's an okay, like, way for me to survive or, like, whatever. So that said, though, it's true. Well, and it's interesting, like, I booked the Swiffer campaign, like, just a couple weeks after I quit. But then, like, so much of the commercial world, it's weird. Like, you know, I didn't get any checks. I just got the session checks. And, like, I didn't know if they were running or not. And, like, then my brother, like, saw a Swiffer commercial on TV. Because, like, my, you know, like, my family back home still has cable.
Right. Yeah.
Anyone I know.
Yeah. And still watches commercials. Doesn't
right.
skip them.
Right. Exactly. And so I was, like, emailing, like, my manager and the, like, creative agency and trying to find out if, like, my voice was in fact airing. And
yeah.
They were like, no. And, like, I was like, I swear, I think they are. And
yeah.
So it was, like, months and months later.
Wow, I didn't know this.
Yeah. Months and months later, like, I had people kind of, like, giving me attitude about trying to, like, speak up for myself and, like, try to figure this out. I would obsessively, like, put on, like, streaming cable and like just like have it on in the background of my life at home to try to catch.
Right.
Like, you know, because it's crazy because it's also, I mean, like minutia, but it was a commercial that had already been running that they replaced the voice on the end of with my voice too.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So literally it was like, it was the like, it had been like 7 months or something since I'd quit waiting tables. I was truly about to run out of money. Like the next month I was like, okay, I'm going to need to figure something out. And then like just all at once, I got a backlog of like
every
4 months of checks.
Wow.
Into my email. Of course, also at that exact moment, I was my relationship was falling to pieces, and you know, because everything's about balance, people.
Seriously, isn't that funny?
About balance.
Isn't that funny how that happens? Literally, that it literally happens just like that. It's absolutely insane.
But then I got to live my sassy single life on all those Swiffer residuals, and let me tell you, that was a fun time.
Oh girl, I heard that right. Commercial nonstop. I'd be like, yep, that's Sarah Beth. Yep, that's Sarah Beth. There she is again. Dog, Swiffer, Sarah Beth. Great.
I mean, I brought it up on a lot of Tinder dates. I won't lie.
Yeah, no, that was me. The voice of Swiffer, you heard me? Yep, that was me. That's amazing.
Well, America recently celebrated coming out day. So we wanted to touch on your coming out story. You're an advocate for the LGBT community. What was it like?
LGBTQ.
I'm sorry.
N-I-A. What is it?
There's a lot of letters now.
Yeah. It's okay. And we love every letter. Yeah. But I just want everyone to be represented.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sorry, y'all.
It's okay. I just want to talk about it. Talk about it.
Yeah, what was your... Well, I don't even know that I know like a coming out story for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have necessarily like a super cut and dry one because, I mean, these days, I identify as pan. I mean, back when I was younger, I identified as bi because pan didn't exist yet.
Right.
But I basically just can't remember a time, like when I hit puberty, any time where it made sense to me to like not potentially be attracted to someone because of their gender, you know? So, like, and I remember thinking that about myself, like, early, like, 12, 13, you know? And then actually, I mean, I basically didn't date very much in high school until my senior year. I had a top secret girlfriend.
Ooh. Right. I didn't even know about this.
It's one of the, like, I mean, God, watching the world evolve on this issue is so amazing. Like, because when I was in high school, and it's not even like my suburb was conservative or particularly religious. It's, you know, a suburb of Baltimore, mid-Atlantic, you know, just like East Coast. But it didn't even occur to me that it would be an option for like my girlfriend and I to be out to the school. There right. were no out gay people at my school.
Wow.
Well, and I will say, too, like if I knew any out gay kids, they were guys. Lesbian identified people are a smaller portion of the population, right. I think, than gay men. But I also think that female sexuality is just generally much more fluid. Okay. So if
that's a whole other episode. That's a whole other episode on the podcast.
Yeah. But and I remember, too, like even so, you know, so I had this girlfriend. I knew I was queer. But even like even going. It definitely something that I felt differently because I was a woman and like just like how I was going to be perceived, because even when I went to musical theater college, I just lied and told everyone that it was my ex-boyfriend because I just like, I don't know. And especially feeling like you're on the spectrum of like pan or bi, like I had this idea of like, maybe I would never date another girl again. And like, if I got to college and introduced myself that way, then like I would define myself.
Right.
Like that. And I mean, these days, like I've never been in a relationship with a man. So,
right.
You know, like I think I am pretty homoamorous.
That's a nice way to put it.
It was definitely a journey. Like, and especially because there aren't at the time there were so few female queer role models. I didn't have any female queer, peers. And I mean, I have a small, like, you know, I mourn in my heart slightly that I, you know, we were at Catholic University, which was like a pretty conservative school. And, you know, the musical theater program wasn't. But again, like if I'd gone to like Sarah Lawrence, can you imagine?
Oh, no, girl.
I would have crushed it. But so I will say, so that's been more of a journey into my adulthood of, you know, like really embracing my queer identity and identifying that way. And then even to like piggyback on that, the platform that being in The Lightning Thief gives me, like in terms of like all these kids that follow us on social media and the fact that just like as I'm on my journey of like authentically just kind of defining myself and, you know, my style and my politics and my, you know, just like how I see the world and how I want to be in the world, the fact that that can be an inspiration to kids. And I mean, in the generation where like they get to start out so much further down the road than we did. I hope that like with every passing day, you know, the likelihood that you can't be out at your high school just gets lower and lower and lower.
Right. Wow. Yeah. Because you know, sometimes I think about the fact that like, you know, I'm in an interracial marriage. It's only been legal for 50 something years. And I have to remind myself, gay marriage has been legal for a quick minute.
Yeah.
A moment in time. Definitely. And it's crazy to think about that it's only been a few years.
And there's still issues. There's still people who won't bake a cake for a gay couple or things like that, which is it's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And that also leads us into our next topic. So you talk about, you know, going through the world. How about who you're going through the world with? Let's talk a little bit about your future wife.
Yes.
Maybe just tell everyone a little bit of how you met her and how that came to be.
Well, we met on Tinder.
Great.
She's a gem of a woman.
Yeah, she's amazing.
I mean, she's really her name's Lily Borgie. She's I mean, I truly feel like the luckiest person. I know that's such a cliche, but like she is such a good person. Like salt of the earth. She works in nonprofit. She plays the oboe. Like she's
I always forget that. She rides a motorcycle.
She rides a motorcycle. Like she has so much going on for herself, just like all on her own. And then she's just one of the kindest, most grounded, best listener, like people that I've ever met, much less like been in love with. And aww. I mean, I was thinking the other day that like, God, we can never break up because like I'm pretty sure all of my friends would choose Lily's side.
That is so funny. And not true, but funny.
No,
I love her.
It's been amazing to watch her like her enter my group of friends and just like because she's so like people just love her. Like
she is
she's
great.
The best.
She's so easy to talk to, so easy to like get along with. Yeah. She's beautiful, which really helps.
Also true.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Helps.
It really does help. And what about, has she dated an actor before? Are you the first actor she's dated?
She has dated an actor before. I mean, I like to say, she loves creative, like, energy and people, even though, like, she didn't choose to do that with her professional life. So I'm going to have amazing health insurance forever.
Yes.
Thankful.
Which is the best. And then she, like, loves, you know, the fact that she's so supportive and loves the fact that I bring all this creative energy and these creative people into our lives, you know?
I love that. And does she also define herself as pansexual or is she?
I think she is bisexual.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
One of the things though that I, when I first met Lily and they were together, they came to something together. The way that Lily looks at Sarah Beth is the way that you hope that your friend finds someone like that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Like you
she
just,
said
you,
that
like
to
it
me.
Just radiates between the two of you. And it's just, it's really beautiful. And before, I can't wait for your wedding.
Yeah. Before I met her, that's exactly what Maggie said. Mm-hmm. She was like, you know, it's just like exactly how I imagine I want my friends to look at someone. Cause you know, Maggie loves you dearly. We all do. And obviously she wants you to be happy. And she knew, I mean, when she met Lily, she knew it was something special.
It's so gay. We are constantly just crying because we love each other so much.
I love that.
It's a lot.
I love that.
And it's amazing.
It's not gay. I do that at home too. I do that
just
at home.
Hold each other, weep, and while our cats sit on our laps.
Well, another thing you recommend to everyone is the Constellation Core. I wanted to talk a little bit about this because
please.
I know how inspirational this project is to you and what it means to you. Mm-hmm. So go ahead, talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's the yin to the yang that I have with like Broadway and Lightning Thief. It's vocal ensemble that's headed up by a woman named Marissa Michelson, who's also my voice teacher. And it's totally experimental, mostly improvised vocal music. Like if you want a reference for it, like you could look up Meredith Monk or Pauline Oliveros are two people who sort of like have worked in this genre before. But it's really like it's super hippy dippy. We constantly call ourselves a cult, which I believe means that we're not a cult.
Right. Okay.
Right. Because
if
right,
you're
right,
self-aware enough, then, you know.
Totally.
Yeah. You're not.
Definition of a cult, you don't call yourself a cult. Yeah. I mean, it's just full of some really amazing, amazing creative people. It's something where, especially because it's mostly improvised. Like, I think as like an interpretive artist, like an actor and a singer, so often you're only doing other people's like words, you know, and writing and ideas. You're interpreting them through yourself. And so to have an outlet where it's all coming from you, where you're like, you know, doing all of the creating, and then also that it's collaborative, because
how many people are in it?
It's anywhere from like 6 to 15 of us at any given time. It's called Constellation Corps because you get sort of a different constellation.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you've gotten to travel too.
Yeah. We went to Greece this past summer and sang at a music festival.
Oh, what a great country.
Oh, yeah.
I just love it so much. I call it home.
There you go. It's so beautiful there.
And where did you perform? Where did you perform? Just to
We performed actually at a music festival in the mountains,
wow,
in a town called Vuvuzela.
Okay,
it's really cool.
I've never been, but you know, it's in my blood.
Yeah,
that's amazing. And you also do workshops and stuff for this group, right?
Yeah,
and things
yeah,
like
I worked
that
with Marissa pretty closely, and she has just a whole sort of like ethos and way of making art that comes from also like, again, if you want to do some Googling, this is a whole other podcast, but. She teaches out of the Libero Canto School of Voice, which is like a lot of body work and the idea that like if you can get your whole sort of instrument to like a neutral, totally free place, then like, you know, we all are music makers and we're all singers.
Kind of like meditation, like getting your mind to a neutral place.
Yeah, kind of like that. Totally. Yeah. And so I work with her on doing some workshops and bringing that into, again, this like idea of improvised music. It's like, yeah, it's a whole other can of worms, but
it
feeds me so much in terms of just like the wanting to have sort of both things firing in my creative life.
And if anybody who's listening is interested, go ahead, look it up. There's a website, Sarah Beth's on the website for some of her work with it. And definitely check it out because it seems like a really amazing program.
That's awesome.
And now the moment, I mean, I've been waiting for, I don't know about y'all, but I definitely wanted to start talking a little bit about The Lightning Thief. So it's honestly, it's a very inspirational story to hear about how that happened and how that came to be. I think it's almost unbelievable. And one thing you said to me on the way here that obviously no one heard it, but you'll talk about it now, is it almost feels like you came in through the back door. So talk about like how that happened for you, you know, versus your typical Broadway bound actor.
Mm-hmm. So take your minds back to the Fargo time.
I am obsessed with
2014.
Here we go.
It was smack dab in the middle, actually, of that period I was talking about of, you know, the Jacobs Pickles waiting tables. I hadn't booked a show in something like 3 years. And my New Year's resolution was that I was going to start sending more actors access submissions.
And for people that don't know, it's a website online for actors who can like basically submit themselves for roles. Most of the time, there's not big projects that you're as an actor yourself able to submit for. Agents have access to it and they can submit to bigger projects, but typically if you're submitting yourself, it's to a smaller project.
Yeah, I love if you ever see a big project on Actors Access, you click on it and the breakdown is like, we need a
amputee.
4'2"
yeah it's always something amputee, so specific,
yeah, Pacific Islander,
yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. what was the breakdown, do you remember what the breakdown was?
Well, so it was four. But one company that does consistently post on Actors Access looking for submissions is TheaterWorks. TheaterWorks USA. They're an incredible company that I think they're like pretty famous for. A lot of people get their equity cards.
Yep.
Yeah, Maggie did Seussical with TheaterWorks.
Yeah, and it is not the most glamorous of theatrical gigs. You are driving your own van and loading the sets into schools yourself and then performing a show for all school children. And I mean, it's incredibly important work. Like so many kids see their first piece of theater because of TheaterWorks, you know, and Yeah, it's an amazing company, and they
do pretty much all children's shows.
Yeah, yeah, all children's shows. So I submitted. I mean, one thing that I've always had a passion for is doing new works.
Mm-hmm.
And so TheaterWorks also commissions a lot of new theater. And so they were adapting Rick Riordan's The Lightning Thief, which is a very popular young adult novel that I had never heard of before that. And yeah, so like in my just, you know, I was every day I was submitting to anything that looked kind of right for me. I believe that, you know, it said that you had to be able to belt pretty high in this
check
in this role.
Check.
And it was, you know, also, I mean, the thing I had done the most up until that time was children's theater. There's a theater in DC called Imagination Stage that actually gave me my equity card and a lot of my like first really awesome work in DC. So I it was also the role was like to play like a million different characters in mm-hmm. the course of this show. And so I just felt like I had really honed those skills, you mm-hmm. know, that was like what I was best at. So I submitted. I had never met the casting director. I had never met the director. I had never met the composer, anyone involved. I was totally unconnected. I just submitted on Actors Access. I got called in. I went in and I got the part. And it was the first thing I'd been cast in something like, you know, 3 years. I, of course, had a vacation booked during the 3 weeks that the workshop was happening that I had to cancel because that's how you book something finally.
It happens. We've all done
it. It's so true. What the hell? Yeah. Why is that?
Yeah. And so the crazy thing is that, yeah, okay, it's a TheaterWorks workshop. You wouldn't think that it would be like a huge deal, but creatively it was like my heart just like exploded wow. with gratitude and love and just like it was challenging mm. and the people involved in this project were so awesome. I was madly, madly in love with this show and this whole project. And it was just 3 weeks of my life. You know, it was the first staged version that they'd ever done of this hour-long wow. version of the show. And it was, I mean, it was incredible. It was incredible. And like the plot thickens though.
Okay, talk to us.
Every year, TheaterWorks does a summer residency at the Lucille Lortel Theater where they give, it's sort of like Shakespeare in the Park. They give away all the tickets mm-hmm. to families. And they were doing The Lightning Thief that summer. And so, you know, we had this incredible workshop of it, but the entire cast of that workshop was 100% white.
Oh.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, and especially in a program where like you're trying to get in underserved communities to right. see the yeah. show, like it's extremely important yeah. yeah, to have diversity. And so they had to replace two of us with actors of color. And unfortunately, it just made the most sense for my track to be mm-hmm. replaced. And so
oh, gosh,
I got the nicest emails I think that I will ever receive from like the director, the choreographer, the composer, to sort of like, you know, that they were, you could tell that they were genuinely heartbroken that they were having to cut me from the project, but it was just like a necessary thing. And so, and it's weird. I remember like, I knew it was a possibility that that was going to happen. And when I got the news that like I wasn't going to be going to do the show that summer, like I wasn't as heartbroken as you thought you'd think I would have been. Like I truly still could just be grateful that like it happened in the first place.
Of course.
You know? Mm-hmm. And then so in a move that TheaterWorks has never done before, they, because this property, The Lightning Thief, is so popular with kids, and because the bones of, you know, the show that they made to tour to schools, this hour-long version, was so good, the writing, you know, the book and the music were so strong, they wanted to expand it to a 2-hour full-length, not children's theater, you know, like a commercial musical theater project. And as they began to make that longer version of the show, one of the first things they did was take the cast of 6 and turn it into a cast of 7 and take the track that I played and split it into 2 roles.
Mm.
So they brought you back.
They brought me back.
Yes. Patience.
That's so lovely.
Yeah. And so then I got to do all the workshops of this longer version. And then we did it off Broadway at the Lucille Lortel. And I will never forget Stephen Brackett, the director, who also directed
Be More Chill on Broadway,
mm-hmm, as well as A Strange Loop at mm-hmm. Playwrights, which was
right
amazing.
He, at the opening night party of our off Broadway run of the long version at the Lortel, told me that like one of the best things about making the longer version is that like he got to bring me back. Uh-huh. And just that like, and it's just like, it just says everything to me that like the karma that we all poured into that like first version, that right. it was so meaningful to me that like it honestly, even though as like crazy as that journey is, as unlikely as it is that like now we're literally. And so then, yeah, then the cliff notes are that off Broadway version went on tour and now we're on Broadway. and so like as crazy
and
as
the cast is so talented. Mm. So everyone in the cast is from the national tour. Mm-hmm. Gosh, everyone is so talented.
And it's also mm-hmm. really such a testament to you as a human and your kindness and how you portray yourself, because if you were not a nice human, why would they ever bring you back? Absolutely. They would just recast you.
Yeah.
But because you're an amazing human and your talents abound, I think it was a no-brainer, I'm sure, for them. They were like, yes, like he said, he was probably excited to bring you back because you're so kind, so talented, so wonderful, and you helped create it. That's such an important aspect of the show.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's that thing where like relationships mm-hmm.
they matter.
They do.
You hear that, ladies and gentlemen? Be kind, because sometimes it might kick you in the butt
and sometimes it might kick you all the way onto the stage of the Longacre Theater.
Well, I think that's like one of the reasons why this story is so relatable, though, because there's so many actors out there that are like hoping for this type of you know,
journey,
ending
story,
to their story, because so many of us are submitting and like auditioning and doing these things. And I almost love hearing a story like this more than I love hearing like, oh, I graduated from Michigan and immediately made my Broadway debut. You know, like this is just so much more, I don't know, it's just so, it's so beautiful. I saw the show a week ago and I cried, you know, I cried a bunch of times because it was like, so because I knew the backstory of it all. Mm-hmm. And I could hear that there was children next to me and they were so excited. And it just like the way the show is touching other people and the way that it's touched your life, it's just, it's really beautiful.
Yeah. It's a testament to just like, you just have to do your work and you can't be attached to the outcome. Like, and that's an impossible practice. It's right. a practice. It's not mm-hmm. a thing that you can just do. But like you, because you just actually never know which piece of work that you're putting out into the world is going to like pay off in this kind of way.
Right.
You know, and there's no guarantees, but there's also no like, there's no reason why it's not going to happen either.
Right.
You know, it's,
and I'm sure there are people that didn't do the Theater Works tour because they were like, oh, it's Theater Works, I'm not going to do it. And look at you now.
Look 100%. At you now.
100%.
No, that's amazing. And also, I mean, the Lightning Thief has a huge fan base, like you said, of children. And that's a lot because they're looking up to you so much. And maybe some of them don't really have these role models. So it's also important to carry on that kindness to them and to your fans. Do you feel like what's your journey with the fans? What has that been like? You went to Comic-Con, you come out every night, you sign playbills, you do all these things for these kids. I mean, they must just go nuts for you. Like, what is that like?
It's the best feeling. Oh my God. I mean, like last night, it's the best too. It's like, because it's a really wide range of ages too. Mm-hmm. Like, the books have been out for a while, so like, you know, there are like early 20-somethings that love these characters, mm-hmm. and then there are like 6-year-olds that love these characters. And just, I love it when the little nuggets are at the stage door. And like one of them yesterday, just like, I signed her playbill and gave it back and was like, thanks for coming. And she just looked at me and goes, you did really good.
Oh, thanks, little peanut.
Yeah.
I mean, do you ever just want to like take someone you don't know and just bring them backstage because they seem so excited? You're like, here, let me just come back.
Totally. Yes. I mean, and it's just, well, first of all, like getting to perform the show every night for people that are so excited, it's something right. that I never take for granted.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, our audiences are lit. Like, and part of that's because the writing is so strong and the performances are strong and it's funny and fun. But like, it definitely also has something to do with the fact that so many audience members are coming in already with a relationship to this story and these characters, you know, and getting to see it is like so exciting for them.
I love that. I love that.
Yeah. I love it. This is one of my favorite questions that I want to ask you is what would you say to 20-year-old Sarah Beth? What advice would you give her? And it could be advice that can apply to other people that are maybe 20 years old going down a similar path.
I mean, I would say work hard, but also do everything you can to stay vulnerable and stay open because it's hard. It's a hard life, this life of rejection and never having any guarantee of success and, you know, just trying to find your own path that's not defined for you. And
because I'm sure you had many days where you weren't sure it was ever going to happen, right?
Absolutely. And I think just the most important thing is, like, if you numb yourself, then, like, so that you don't feel the lows, then you also won't be able to appreciate the highs.
Wow. Mm. That's deep.
And so the work is to take care of yourself during the lows, but also, like, stay open and stay engaged and, you know, just like anything you can do to be in the world and, you know, opening yourself up to other people and other art and making your own art and being creative in any way you possibly can, even when it's like not going to have a big impact in the world, just do it.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, honestly, like, I could use that advice more than anything, but so I'm sure people are going to really connect with that. As artists, half the thing is sometimes we hear nothing. You know, it's not even hearing yes or no. Like, sometimes we just hear nothing, and you have to be okay with that because it'll break you down. I mean, it almost did. You kind of almost gave it up for a second.
Absolutely.
There.
And
how many people are making their Broadway debut in the show?
9 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And do you guys just pinch yourself every day?
Oh, my God. I mean, that's another thing that I'm so grateful for is, like, getting to share this experience with these people that I was on the road with for 7 months and who all are not taking a single moment of it for
it's
granted.
Amazing. Make sure y'all go check out The Lightning Thief. Can you just plug the show real quick?
Yes.
Where they can get tickets, how long they can see it for, all this stuff.
The Lightning Thief, the Percy Jackson musical, now playing through January 5th at the Long Acre Theater on 48th Street. In Midtown Manhattan. We have if you just look up Lightning Thief Musical, we've got a website. You can get tickets there. We also have rush tickets that if you show up at the box office in the morning when it opens. It's a good time. Y'all should come down.
I love that. Amazing. We love that so much. We're so proud of you. That was amazing.
Hey, if you'd like to listen to Radio Free Brooklyn when you're not in front of your computer, please consider downloading our free mobile app for iPhone and Android, available in the App Store for iPhone or the Google Play Store for Android. After more than a year of dreaming, researching, experimenting, late night conference calls, and early Saturday morning meetings, the Me Team is happy and proud to present to you the Me Bottle. This double-insulated, reusable stainless steel bottle disinfects water in a 60-second cycle utilizing UVC LED technology and is 99.99% effective against E. coli. A single charge via micro USB lasts up to 30 days, and the bright LED display lets you know when water is ready to drink. Join us in bringing clean water to all. Raise your bottle and drink to you and me. Find out more at mebottle.com.
We're going to move on to a little fun little section that we love to do, and it's called Winging It.
Winging it, they're just winging it. Winging it, they're just winging it.
All right, so Sarah Beth, every episode we kind of come up with like a fun improv segment. Since we bring a bunch of creative goobers out there, we love to do like a little improv segment that's just like on the whim. Just have fun with it. There's honestly no pressure at all, and it's always catered to the guests that we have on.
We're gonna do so in your show. You have a million characters that you play, so we were like, how can we have fun with this? So basically, what I did was we were gonna do like a little improv game where I wrote little characters in this little hat, this beautiful Nico Frank Productions hat. So we're gonna use like a really generic song, like Happy Birthday, right?
Yeah.
And so you're gonna sing line by line, but in these characters' voices. So you'll pick one, you'll sing Happy Birthday to you in that character, then you pick another, and so on.
So here we go. Here is some winging it.
And just read out loud what you got.
Okay. All right, here we go.
We have protective, warm, and loving mother.
Aww.
That's nice.
Happy birthday to you.
Oh, I feel like a hug. I feel like I just got hugged by my mother.
Grumpy old man. Happy birthday to you. Very drunk granny. Happy birthday, dear Spiro. All my old people have New York accents for some reason. A French sophisticated skunk. Happy birthday to... That was the skunk
tail
stuff coming out.
Oh.
Yeah. Broadway. To you.
Sarah Beth, that was honestly truly amazing.
That
I've never been so moved.
A small sample of what you'll see on stage. Sarah Beth plays like 20 different voices. One of my favorites is the chipmunk.
Yes. Well, squirrel actually.
Squirrel.
Yeah.
Squirrel. Mm-hmm. That's right. Good, because the more people that know that this human here and the amazing things that she does on that stage, the better. Y'all, look her up. I mean, her YouTube.
You have a website, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Plug your social media. Plug your website. Check her out on YouTube. Like, you will not be sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yep. SarahBethPfeiffer.com. Insta is it's me, SBP.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And it's... Pfeiffer, Pfeiffer.
Yes.
Just to be specific.
Guys, I feel so lifted up.
You're amazing. I feel better than when I walked in, thanks to you. I feel like there's still hope for me in this community and in this world. Honestly, 100%. Do you not like have a moment thinking like this might happen for me? Like,
it's very inspiring.
It really is.
It's lovely. And when one of your best friends makes it on Broadway, it hits your heart.
Yeah.
Well, but what you guys are doing, exactly what I was saying, like you don't know what the thing is going to be. You're doing your work in this insane, beautiful way. I'm so blessed to be here, like to be given this platform by you. And so like, that's just all it is. It's like, it's taking each other by the hand, like literally, and bringing your community on your own journey. Like you're not alone. We started this, and that's where it's gonna end.
Yes, well, we love you. Thank you so much for taking a seat at the Cool Kids table. We are just so happy to have you. Thank you for inspiring the kids. Thank you for inspiring us. Congrats on your Broadway debut. Giving Tuesday is the antidote to Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Give back on Tuesday, December 3rd by donating or creating your own fundraiser for Radio Free Brooklyn. On that date, RFB will also be launching Drive to Five, a campaign leading up to our 5-year anniversary in May. We think giving should be so fun, so each month we'll be offering challenges and prizes like limited edition RFB t-shirts, me bottles, free podcasting sessions, and more. Our goal is to raise $25,000 to continue bringing you independent, local community radio for another 5 years. Right now, you can help us reach our goal through a monthly pledge or one-time donation at radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate. That's radiofreebrooklyn.org/donate.
Please be sure to subscribe to our monthly newsletter for your latest news about new programming and upcoming RFB events. You can sign up at radiofreebrooklyn.org/newsletter.